ready to order as a subcommittee until we have another member here. But we're doing that in order to take testimony on Senate Bill 413. Senator Nelson. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Starr, Vice Chair Senator Deckert. Thank you very much for having me here today. For the record, I'm Representative Greg Smith. I represent District 57, which includes Union, Wallowa, Umatilla, and Morrow County. I'm pleased to be here today to testify in favor of Senate Bill 413. This is a piece of legislation that is desperately needed. What it is going to do is it's going to direct the university, Eastern Oregon University in La Grande, to study and plan for the expansion of the Pierce Library at Eastern Oregon University, and it would declare an emergency. This is truly a needed project for so many reasons. Eastern Oregon University truly serves as one of the central hubs of economic development in Eastern Oregon, and their efforts are felt not only on campus, but through all of Eastern Oregon and Southern Oregon and Central Oregon, and that's why I'm here today. I'm going to actually step back and allow the good senator and the president to share the details of the need for this bill, but I do want you and the members of this committee to know how much I appreciate your leadership on this issue and allowing this issue to come forward. Thank you, Chair Starr.
Thank you. And since we now have a quorum, I'm going to reopen the hearing with the quorum and Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. My name is David Nelson. I'm a state senator from Pendleton. I represent a four-county area in northeast Oregon, Umatilla, Union, Wallowa, and Morrow counties. We're here in support of Senate Bill 413. It's a step forward. We understand we're all in a financial crunch, and we're going to ask the committee to send this bill to Ways and Means. That's what we really want to happen. But we're trying to prepare for the future. We believe that the glass is half full, and that we need to be looking in past the doom and gloom that we're going through right at the moment, and to be able to set the stage for the recovery and for the things that Eastern has started in the last 5 years under Dr. Creighton, as president of the university, has made some great steps forward. Increased enrollment in that part of the country. He's connected with the Senate Bill 622 that we did in 1999, building the fiber optic network. This library can be a huge part of that. We just feel it's time to be looking forward, and we support this bill. And I'd like to turn over to the good president.
Chairman Starr, members of the subcommittee, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. I'm Phil Creighton. I'm president of Eastern Oregon University. I'm here to talk about a very special project, and that is the Learning Center on our campus. Now, to appropriately appreciate this project, I want you to take you back to 1951, if I may. In 1951, Eastern Oregon University was named Eastern Oregon College of Education. We had 451 students on campus. We had five buildings. One of those was a Quonset hut that the U.S. Army gave us as the student center. We had a faculty of 30 members at that particular time. The library held, when Pierce Library was built in 1951, it held 25,000 volumes. That campus was a very vibrant educational institution at that particular time. But Eastern Oregon University has changed significantly since that period. To give you an idea, what's happened in the last 52 years is that we've added a considerable number of students. Our current enrollment is 3,452. For the past 4 years, we've been the fastest growing institution within the Oregon University system. Our faculty has grown from 30 to over 100, and the volumes in the library has grown from 25,000 to about 150,000 volumes. This growth in a space that has not expanded has caused us significant problems. For example, to accommodate those growth in volumes, they increased the height of the stacks. This has caused some significant fire marshal issues, if you can imagine. Also, some issues with seismic stability of those stacks under those conditions. In addition, because we've had to crowd the stacks together, we have issues of handicap accessibility into the book stacks themselves. So it indeed is an emergency situation. situation as far as access to these materials are concerned. What we're asking is planning money for $1.5 million to initiate planning for the library structure. And I know and I fully acknowledge that it's a very difficult time to ask for any money, but I'm asking you to invest in the future. Just as we did for the Science Center, we will match the dollars for construction from private, public, and federal sources to make this project a go. We had the commitment from the federal government, for example, to look at this as a cultural learning center and get federal dollars for that. The state will contribute, hopefully, additional monies. Our foundation will contribute private dollars for the construction of this library as well. The combination of those three sources, just as we did for the library, form a very, very vibrant partnership. This partnership that we're talking about also extends through the community college system, K through 12, and other public education systems within Oregon. Eastern Oregon University is an institution that collaborates extensively, and this library will benefit, for example, students at Blue Mountain and the Treasure Valley Community Colleges because of our collaboration through the EOCCC, which is the Eastern Oregon College Collaborative Center. We are able to provide those programs through the technology that this library will provide. We've also started a new program with high school students within our area called the Senior Year Advantage, which will allow seniors to get efficient use of time and energy by taking college courses while they're still high school seniors. This allows the transition into the senior year from high school into college in a very, very efficient way. The bill then would provide us planning money to initiate this project. Like any other project, everyone says, well, who's going to put the money on the table first? And this is why we're asking you to help us put the money on the table first. It's always a privilege to appear before this subcommittee, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Senator Starr, thank you.
We have another witness at the table, please.
Senator Starr, Chair Starr, and Senator Deckert, Senator Morissette, I thank you very much for hearing us today. I really am here in support of my president in making this request for the funding for this addition to the new facility. Eastern Oregon University, as we know, is always out there in the region working in partnerships. And just as the university has done this, the library has followed very closely on the mission of partnering. We've developed library systems that takes in the whole 10-county region. We partner with all 70 libraries, school, public, and academic libraries in the region. We've developed many different partnering aspects, and so we're there for you to look at different ways, problem-solving in resolving this issue, and I do appreciate this time before you, and I'm happy to answer any questions also. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you.
Thank
appreciate
you.
The testimony. We have Jim Shepke and Rob Wagner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Shepke. I'm the director of the State Library. I am here today to support the need of the Pierce Library for an expanded library facility. I've been to their facility many times, and it truly is inadequate. They need more space desperately for books, for technology, for their students, and the need is great. I'd also note that every other library in the Oregon University system has been expanded or improved in the last decade, and it really is time for the needs of Eastern Oregon University to be met. And finally, Mr. Chair, I wanted to say that no other library in the Oregon University system does more to serve their region of the state. As Ms. Cutright just testified, the Pierce Library truly is a very vital real partner with all the public libraries, all the community college libraries, and all the school libraries in Eastern Oregon. They formed the Pioneer Library System, which is a shared computer system that connects all the libraries, and they just do a tremendous job for the whole region, and we really would like to see their needs met. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your questions. Compelling testimony. Rob Wagner, please.
And where were you when we called your name?
I'm sorry, I was Chair Starr, Senator Decker. I was down in the Everfund PERS Committee, House PERS Committee. So, assuming we're on the Eastern Oregon University bill here, expansion of Pierce Library.
Correct.
Okay, I'm testifying.
Or whatever's on my mind.
Yeah. Again, Chair Starr, members of the Senate Education Committee. My name is, for the record, Rob Wagner. I'm the Government Relations Director for the American Federation of Teachers Oregon. And we, I'm here today representing the faculty and librarians who recently organized at Eastern Oregon, and wanted to basically just say we're very much in support of the concept of the bill. In talking with our faculty and librarians over there, they did have some concerns where the $1.5 million was going to come from in tight fiscal times, which I thought was a nice comment. And just for the record, I thought I'd read, since it's a long drive from LeGrand, the testimony of Shirley Roberts, who is a librarian at Eastern, if I could, just into the record, and then respond to any questions if you have any. We support the passage of Senate Bill 413 to appropriate funds to Eastern Oregon University for the study and planning for the expansion of Pierce Library. Besides Pierce Library's role academically, it plays an integral part in the region's economic development. Access to information is provided through an open-door policy for all Eastern Oregonians. Services available to all citizens are regional borrowing privileges that enrich and enhance information retrieval, an array of databases and resources that promote economic development, the promotion and assistance in the use of technology in locating information, and the expertise of professionally trained librarians for assistance in finding information. So that was her comments that she wanted to get on the record but wasn't able to make it over the mountains. So I'm glad to take any questions.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
With that, close the public hearing. Open a work session on Senate Bill 413.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 413 to Ways and Means with a due fund recommendation.
Senator Deckard has moved Senate Bill 413 to Ways and Means with a due fund recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Show that we all are in support. And we will move on to a public hearing on Senate Bill 10. I think there are a few folks here interested in Senate Bill 10 today. Might even be quite a few folks. We're going to, I'm looking here. We want Senator Peter Courtney to come up, chief sponsor of this bill. And we do have a lot of people signed up, have no one signed up in opposition to the bill. I would like very much if you would keep the testimony, limit the testimony. We got enough folks here to keep us here all evening. Senator Courtney, please.
Thank you, Chair Starr, members of the Senate Education Committee, Senator Morissette, Senator Deckard, and Senator Ferrioli, and Committee Administrator Jan McComb. My name is Peter Courtney. And I live at 2925 Island View Drive, northeast here in Salem. I'm a state senator, and my Senate district is Senate District 11. A teenage boy or girl goes to high school in Oregon. They complete their studies, and they graduate. They apply to go to one of our state universities. They meet the stringent entrance requirements and are admitted. They then learn they will have to pay out-of-state tuition. Why? Because they were not born in Oregon or born in this country. The difference in tuition and fees per term is significant. On average, $1,400 for in-state versus $5,300 for out-of-state. That's per term. And there, we operate on a three-term system in the state of Oregon. That is, each academic year in higher education consists of three terms. So it's a difference between $1,400 per term on the average and $5,300 per term. This will undoubtedly prevent these students from continuing their education. It's cost prohibitive. Most of these non-resident students, if you will, have spent years in Oregon's K through 12 school system. By contrast, a person who is a citizen and has spent only 1 year in Oregon is eligible for in-state tuition. This piece of legislation, with a dash to amendments, and I emphasize that, I'm speaking from the dash to amendments, requires a student to have attended an Oregon high school for three consecutive years, receive a high school diploma or its equivalent from an Oregon high school, and if they aren't a legal citizen, resident, or citizen already, they must pledge to pursue such status. If these requirements are satisfied and the student qualifies for admission to an Oregon University System institution, they will pay and be eligible for in-state tuition. Senate Bill 10 is not about special privileges. It will not prevent or displace Oregon resident students from our public universities. It does not take money from one group and give it to another. The Oregon University System officials are here to testify about these matters. Senate Bill 10 is about helping young people get a college education by removing economic roadblocks. Education is the key to personal growth and opportunity. It is also key to the economic recovery and future of our state. You are the Senate Education Committee, and you are the Senate's leaders for good education and access to that good education. Senate Bill 10 is about education, it's about access, and it's also about fairness. Senate Bill 10 kids have worked hard, have studied hard, often overcoming tremendous obstacles and barriers. They are involved in their schools and their communities, all the while in Oregon. They are not responsible for how or when they came here. They have proven they are good college-ready students. They are good Oregonians. Let's them give them a chance at a college education. Thank you. I'm joined today, if I could, by the principal of Woodburn High School, Laura Lanka, who was the individual that helped with me and asked me to introduce this bill. And I would like, if I could, to have her testify, if I could, Chair Starr.
Please. Thank you, Laura.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Laura Lanka, and I'm principal of Woodburn High School, a school in Marion County. And I'm here in support of Senate Bill 10. Currently, many students in our state who have lived here most of their lives who will graduate with a high school diploma from our schools and who wish to pursue further education in a four-year college will find out that they are not eligible for in-state tuition. These students, through no fault of their own, do not have the right eligibility. Don't you think this is an educational problem? From my perspective, it most definitely is. If some of our best and brightest students are not able to continue on to college, how will they be able to contribute to our state? How can I convince them to take the Certificate of Initial Mastery seriously? Secondly, don't you think it's a motivational problem? We have always learned that if we work hard in school, the doors of college are open for us. Imagine what it must be like to be ready and prepared to go to college and then not have the ability to do so. Don't you think of it as an economic issue? With college-educated graduates in our workforce and in our state, our economy improves. With high school diploma only, students' earning power is diminished. Again, these are well-prepared students to which I'm referring. This is not about busting the state's budget. I know how hard you're working on that. We all know. We read about it all the time. This will not cost the state any money. Students will not receive scholarships nor loans. Under this bill, they would become eligible for in-state tuition. The bill allows longtime resident and immigrant youth who have earned it the chance to change their status and enable them to contribute fully to our society. Other states have realized this, and they have found that if they lock out the high school graduates from pursuing higher ed, they do not actually help their budget. Therefore, Texas and Oklahoma and California and New York and Utah have all passed similar legislation. The state of Washington just passed its own version in its House by 75-20, and it's now going on to the Senate in Washington. Florida, Illinois, Nebraska, and Georgia also have bills pending in this session. At the federal level, Utah's Orrin Hatch is introducing the DREAM Act that allows immigrant students to adjust their status to that of a legal permanent resident. George Bush said, "The question I like to ask every child I visit in the classroom is, are you going to college? In this great country," he continued, "we expect every child, regardless of how he or she is raised, to go to college." He also really meant that for the No Child Left Behind Act. These are talented immigrant students, many of whom have grown up their entire lives here in the United States. They've attended the same elementary and high schools that my own children did, and they've excelled in the same academic requirements as their classmates. I thank you very, very much for considering Senate Bill 10 because it provides an affordable way to pursue a university program. Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much. Questions? Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to ask if the witnesses would just briefly address lines 16 and 17 of the Dash 2 amendments.
The student plans to become a citizen or legal resident alien as determined by the board by rule. Chair Starr, Senator Farrell, you're asking?
Mr. Chairman, the object here, I think, is to try to uncomplicate people's lives and connect them with a career path. But the Dash 2 requires a set of findings. How will young Hispanic students who've graduated from a high school demonstrate what their future plans relative to their legal status is? Will they write a letter? Do they take an oath of allegiance? Do they have some litmus test? Is there some written statements they need to make? Is there a loyalty oath required? I mean, how will students demonstrate they plan? I mean, I'm not even certain many of the Hispanic students in this country want to be citizens of the United States. They are here. They certainly are becoming a very rapidly growing segment of the population in my district, and I think this bill addresses an issue of access and reduces some obstacles. But I'm not really clear on what was intended by this plan to become a citizen or a legal resident alien. And how will they prove it, and how will the board rule?
Judge Starr, Senator Farioli, that is why we said it should be done by rule. There are officials here from the Oregon University System can speak to that. California has similar language in their bill. To be frank with you, that was put it in there as an attempt to try to make sure the bill got through, but actually how they're going to do it would be up to the administrative rules and the public hearings involved in that as to what kind of evidence they would submit, be it a statement, whatever. I think one state says they actually have to have an affidavit. We felt that was too strict, that was too legal, and too dramatic, and so we left it to administrative rule to be decided by the board of the our Oregon University System. And so they'll decide the kind of evidence or how they want to deal with that.
Mr. Chair, I think it's a fair point of whether we need to have that, though. I mean, I don't need it. Plans to become, I mean, and then it saves the board actually having to make the rule and determine. I think it's a good point of do you need that language there that they plan on becoming a citizen? I don't think it's necessary.
Orrin Hatch, I think it's federal legislation. I think it's coming through in federal legislation.
Well, the only thing I'll defer to the committee's expertise and work session on that is how you want to handle that. That is the best I can do at this time. If that offends you, that language, then you can take it out. But there's an attempt here to try to simply comply with other statutes and other states that have attempted to line this up, that have had experience with it. The state of Texas law is different, I know, than the state of California laws, and this is a work in progress. Congress, and so we simply are borrowing on the other states that have already taken this rather fair and bold step. And that's the best way I can answer it. So if this committee decides in its wisdom that it chooses not to have that language, then so be it. We were simply trying to make sure that we had a comprehensive piece of legislation.
Follow-up, Ferrioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In Section 2 of the Dash 2 Amendments, Line 4, a student who is not a citizen of the United States or who is not a legal resident alien shall be considered a resident of the state for the purpose of determining tuition. Couldn't we achieve the same objective if we simply required 3 years of continuous attendance at high school, that we also required a diploma or a GED, as is contained in the rest of the Dash 2s, and make no reference to whether or not the student was a legal alien or a legal resident alien or a citizen of the United States? I mean, I'm not sure we have any citizenship requirement or resident alien status requirement for attendance of a grade school. Do we?
No.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I guess the question for me is the reference of the alien status, I think, is meant to possibly deal with the issue of people that would ask the question, why should Oregonians pay for the education of residents in the state that are not legal residents or citizens of the United States? And we obviously don't ask that question in grade school. Why would we ask it and we don't ask it in high school. Why would we ask it in just matriculating to the higher education system?
Well, Chair Starr, Senator Farrell, you have officials here in the Oregon University system. I understand they have very strict residency requirements to be admitted into our Oregon University system.
Mr. Chairman, if I could. There are. You're right.
So I'm just
for tuition purposes.
Right.
But I don't think there's any other purposes. This bill is essentially dealing with tuition.
That's correct.
Issues. And I guess, Mr. Chairman, the question that still occurs to me is, if we simply said that if a person was a student within the state who attended for 3 consecutive years in a secondary school and had a high school diploma or its equivalent, that they would be considered a resident for tuition purposes. And if there's other reason to do this, then perhaps somebody from OUS could come up and help us clarify that.
You not only do I suggest OUS, but you need to suggest you bring legislative counsel in here as well, because I just want to be sure that legally we don't pass out a piece of legislation that later on gets us into a problem in terms of the interpretation of law. That's all I'm going to suggest about that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess the other issue might be that at some future date, if a student changes their plan, are they somehow culpable? Is there a liability that follows? Would they be assessed a higher rate? I mean, you know, to me it's pretty iffy just to base the resident tuition on an assertion made by a student who could logically be assumed to be making that assertion in a coerced manner. I mean, the fact is, if you're looking at a $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 difference between being able to go to a college or a community college and not being able to go to a community college, and some official of the community asks you to sign a written statement that says you plan to become a citizen or a resident alien, but what are the chances that you're going to sign that, and would that be coerced or not coerced? I mean, I just think it puts students in a very uncomfortable position relative to their residency status and their intentions, future intentions. And, you know, it certainly wouldn't be an enforceable oath, or if it were, there would certainly seem to be some liability that attached to it. And that's a heck of a lot to load on a high school kid. All I want to do is go to college and pursue a career. I guess I'm confused by a lot of this bill. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. Any other questions?
I'll show my ignorance. How old does one have to be to apply for citizenship?
Senator Starr, it's my understanding that one needs to be 18 years old and have lived here for 5 years. There may be others who know better than I, but that's my understanding.
So the application for citizenship could be done simultaneously with the application for enrollment. That's a possibility. No.
Thank you. That is a possibility, I'm sure. Well, I see the dash twos personally as an attempt to get around the suggestion by some of the opponents that I have received in the mail of inviting illegal aliens. And I think that these folks are here with good intention of becoming citizens, and that they are, if they've been in our system 3 years, they have applied themselves to our system and have succeeded. So I don't have any further questions for the witnesses.
Would it be unreasonable to say that as they apply for enrollment in a school in Oregon, they also apply for citizenship? Is that unreasonable? They start the process of the citizenship. Have you thought of that? Is that important?
Well, Chair Starr, Senator Marissette, we were attempting to suggest that in the bill. They obviously be running some rough sledding by Senator Ferrioli on that issue. So I don't know whether it's reasonable or not. I guess you're going to have to decide whether you think it's reasonable or not. It's a very good bill. I just want these students to have a chance at interstate tuition. So that's what the bottom line is here. So I don't know how to respond differently to that.
I guess one of the things that I need to be have clarified are, what are the disadvantages of being a United States citizen if you decide to leave the country? I mean, I know many nations will allow dual citizenship. I'm not sure what the rules are here, but I mean, I don't see a downside to applying for citizenship, taking advantage of the breaks, and whether or not you decide to leave. What difference does it make? I mean, you've applied for the citizenship. You would become a citizen in the process. That seems to solve part of the problem. And I'm sure that when, as people testify, maybe that will come up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're excused.
They're waiting.
Kate wants to.
Senator Brown, please. Excuse me, I didn't see you. I'm sorry.
Talk about Acerto.
Mr. Chair, I know you didn't see me, and that's why I waved my arms vigorously, and I apologize, but I'm extremely late for a 3:15 meeting at this point in time. So, if you don't mind, for the record, State Senator Kate Brown, I represent a little bit of Northeast Portland, a little bit of Milwaukee, and a major bit of Southeast Portland. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 10. I thank you very much for hearing this bill. I think it's fairly simple. The immigration status, you can all talk about, but I think the goal of the bill, as Senator Courtney so eloquently stated, is to allow students who have attended high school in Oregon for a number of years to be able to obtain in-resident tuition rates at our colleges and universities. And I think it's really important. I think it's about making sure the folks that live here and hopefully become citizens, if they choose to do so, and if they are able to do so, get the college education that is so critical to being successful in life. So I think it's pretty simple, and I would really urge your I vote and get this bill moving. We're running out of time, so I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Ferrioli.
Is there a prohibition that you're aware of that connects tuition with immigration status?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ferrioli, I know nothing about that issue. I will state for the record, I was born in Spain on U.S. Air Force Base. I was a dual citizen. I had dual citizenship with Spain as well. No one ever asked me about my residency status when I applied for college. I don't know what the status of the law is in that area, but I'm sure legislative counsel and the certified smart folks can answer those questions for you. So,
So may I ask,
are you
eligible to serve as in this legislative body?
I sure hope so, Senator Morissette.
Oh, I think
there is an issue whether I could run for president of the United States, however.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If that were the case, then Senator Corcoran and Senator Brown would have a problem because Senator Corcoran is Irish-born, as most of the members
do. Yes.
Gracious.
Unfortunately, Senator Morissette can't claim the Irish-born status. So,
thank you, Senator Brown. Appreciate it. The university folks, Bratton, Terrence, Agnes Hoffman, Dr. Leo Delgo,
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Yes.
Bratton, Terrence. You're receiving my testimony now, and with it some frequently asked questions regarding residency status. Let me begin by addressing my testimony to you. Then there are a number of questions that have been asked, and I'd be happy to provide some information regarding them. I'm here representing the Oregon University System in support of Senate Bill 10. If it is amended in the manner presented by Senator Courtney, and I believe those amendments are helpful, not harmful to the bill. The OUS believes that while the number of individual students who will be advantaged by this measure is probably very small, and I'm making that calculation based on a headcount now of over 100,000 in our 7 institutions and an FTE of in excess of 78,000, the symbolic value in deciding the equity issues addressed by the bill in favor of the learner makes passage of the bill worthwhile. The purpose of Senate Bill 10 is consistent with the mission of the university system to engage every academically prepared and financially able Oregon high school graduate. While the passage of the bill will still leave considerable financial hurdles in the way of any student who would meet all the criteria of the amended bill, the bill does allow the OUS to evaluate these students based on their academic merit, and that's really the heart of the matter. In making that decision on the admission of a student who applies to an OUS campus under the criteria set out in either the original or the amended bill, the academic status of the student is separated from the residency status created by the transgressions of his or her parents or guardians when the student, as a minor child, began residency in the state of Oregon. Put directly, the measure would prevent the residency irregularities engaged in by his or her parents from being visited upon the child and allows the student to correct the mistakes made on their behalf in the past while pursuing a self-financed post-secondary education. Attached to my testimonial with it is a set of frequently asked questions on the residency issues touched upon by this bill. In going through them, you will see the fairly complex tests a student must overcome and the proof needed to both secure resident status and also gain financial aid assistance. In our view, the fiscal impact of the measure is indeterminate given the practical barriers to enrollment these students would face, especially those relating to finances, although there would be a marginal value to the admitting campus from the tuition received from this class of students. In conclusion, the OS supports the measure if it is amended by the committee as requested by Senator Courtney, and I'd be happy to try and answer any questions. Let me take on a couple of those which have been touched on. The purpose of the amendment, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, is taken directly from many of the statutes which you've heard earlier have already been approved in other legislatures in other states and in the Washington bill. And I've got a synopsis of it here. In Washington, they said the students who A, graduate from high school in the state or attended high school for at least 3 years in the state, and B, files an application for permanent residency and engages in activities necessary to acquire citizenship. There are variants of that in all the other bills, and this would simply looking at the dash two amendments now, where Here it is, line 16 and 17. The student plans to become a citizen or a legal resident alien as determined by the board by rule. That was one of the questions that Senator Ferrioli raised earlier. That would be administratively the easiest way to do it, by allowing the university systems board to adopt by rule a consensus composite of all the language used in other states, and more importantly, to square up or true up this bill, if it becomes law, with pending federal legislation. So we would be in train with that and be able to match it, and if we didn't, be able to easily amend without having to come back to you and seek further amendment in the statute. So we think that gives us administrative flexibility. The fact that a student comes to us under Senate Bill 10, if it were amended, would have to, through that rule, either by signing an additional affidavit — they already have to sign an affidavit in order to advance their admission application — would lay out what the board's rules would require. Our goals would be to try and make that administratively simple, but also of value to both the student and to Oregon as a whole, so that we would be making sure that those students who are coming and enjoying resident tuition would be making a good faith effort, at least to the ability that they have, to square up and correct their residency status. And last, let me say that there is a misunderstanding afoot about Senate Bill 10 relative to some advantage going to a student who had qualified. Students who come forward and are found and declare that they are not residents are faced with extraordinary tuition levels for non-resident status. They are also ineligible for federal assistance, cannot execute a FAFSA, the free application for federal student aid, and are ineligible for the Oregon Opportunity Grant, and thus would have to finance their own education. So we think we have few of those students who are now here. You'll hear from others who have more direct experience in relationship to our head count who are in that class. And thus, 15,000, 100% of 15, nothing is nothing. Even if it's 15,000 and you don't collect it, you still have nothing. Whereas if you collect the resident tuition from one of these students, self-financed, the campus is advantaged. And last, as I said in my testimony, no student who comes here, or as we said in the frequently asked questions, no student in this class would displace another student who is a native-born or a person who has become a legal resident of the United States of America and the state. Last, let me suggest that while it might be worthwhile to amend the dash 10s, and I just remember this, by taking out the part that directs the language about who is not a legal resident alien and making just the test, the 3 years and the high school diploma or its equivalent, while well-intentioned, could find us in conflict with the Interstate Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution, because right now we couldn't set such a high admission test for admission, I believe, to one of our institutions that said before you can even come here, you and a legal guardian or parent must first, A, reside here, and then complete high school. Because right now a person who comes to the state of Oregon, resides here for 12 months or more, and establishes residency and is a citizen of the United States and a resident of Oregon, is thus eligible for resident undergraduate tuition or resident graduate tuition. And this would require them to have been here, out of school for 3 years, get that high school diploma, and then apply. And that is a barrier too high for us to erect, I believe. happy to answer any of the questions that I've either created in your mind.
Apparently you've got questions.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as is often when I listen to Mr. Cairns, he's created more questions than he's answered. That's often the case. But the one question I think that really deserves to be answered is, are we making a solution that's more difficult than the problem? You just seemed to me to be testifying to the fact that the OUS system already has the administrative authority to make a rule that would ease these barriers for people to attend, and just simply say, if you have a 3-year high school diploma or its equivalence, you're a resident for tuition purposes.
No, Mr. Chairman, no, we would not. We'd need the bill.
Right.
We'd need the bill, and it would be helpful to have that rule. If you want to leave it behind, that's fine, but that would mean that we would, we would have one that is not like the rest of those passed in the United States of America in other states, and wouldn't allow us to try and match up with those and have a parallel construction. If you don't wish to do that, that's fine. But we don't, on our own motion, have the ability to do that, to pass a rule to allow someone to come in who's in this classification. We would need the bill in order to allow them to avail themselves of resident tuition rights.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, now there is a whole cloud of questions that Mr. Curran has raised. In your frequently asked questions, you indicated that students who don't indicate their residency status on the application are still eligible to attend the university system.
Which question is that, Mr. Chairman?
In your frequently asked questions.
Which number?
Gosh, I don't know. Didn't you write these things?
Yeah, I got them by numbers here.
number 5.
Yes. It may be impossible for a student to misrepresent their citizenship. That is correct. And it says that in paragraph 2, i.e. claim U.S. citizenship when he or she is not or on an application form.
And section 3?
Paragraph 3.
Yes.
In cases where the citizenship question is left blank on the application, the form would be processed to determine the student's admissibility. We ultimately determine the individual status before matriculation, that is to say, before they matriculated from high school and were an admitted student.
Okay, then, Mr. Chairman, if I could continue. If the student arrives at the administration office with a high school diploma from Oregon or a GED, what would trigger the question about their residency status?
Mr. Chairman, not their citizenship.
Their residency status.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Senator Farioli, every student who comes would have to, in the application process, as I understand it, would execute a notarized OUS residence information affidavit form. That's under question 2. So that's uniform, as I understand it. Every student who's admitted would go through that gate.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm still mired in the question of how does the issue of citizenship bear on the question of tuition after the residency?
Because a person has to assert and state that what their citizenship status is, and they are asked on that if they are you'll see on question 3, paragraph 2, the U.S. residence information affidavit also asks if an individual is a U.S. citizen. If the answer is no, the individual must furnish a copy of their residence alien card from I-94 or other documentation, and it carries over to question 4, what sort of status could a person have as a non-U.S. citizen and still qualify? And it becomes pretty complex. There are a lot of categories where someone who has a valid non-U.S. citizen visa or refugee or political asylum status could, in fact, if they've been here and met the residence requirement of living here more than 1 year, or coming on a student visa, could in fact be admitted.
So which is it, Mr. Chairman?
Which is which?
It says in section 4, if other usual residency criteria are met, does that qualify the addition to the filing of the documentation? Is it in addition to or in lieu of documentation?
100%. It would be, I will stand corrected by others who are more certified smart on this issue, but my understanding is that if you file the affidavit, you say no, then you have to demonstrate what your status is. There are elements of status in which a person could qualify for and be eligible for consideration as an Oregon resident for tuition purposes.
So, Mr. Chairman, it appears to me you already have this authority.
Mr. Chairman, not to my knowledge, and I think we're going to hear testimony from my colleagues at the witness stand about some of those particulars, but unless there are other questions, let me just reiterate that from our purposes, the bill would be needed. It would be helpful, although not necessary, to adopt the -2 amendments, we think would be helpful. And we would need the bill in order to extend to that class of student who has none of those status documents that you can see in item question 4, is not and cannot square up to the residency requirement by virtue of their undocumented status, could be admitted if he meets the tests in this bill. And we think, from an equity standpoint, that learner ought to be advantaged, and we do not believe it would disadvantage another student. If the other questions, be happy to address them.
Don't go away.
Thank you.
Senator Starr, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, my name is Agnes Hoffman. I am the Associate Vice Provost for Enrollment Management and Student Affairs at Portland State University. I thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 10. Based on the remarks of the presenters before me, I'll make mine brief and simply say that there are some very compelling reasons for pursuing Senate Bill 10. Portland State University is the most diverse campus in the Oregon University system in terms of cultural and ethnic student enrollment. However, we have but 3.8% of our student body of Hispanic or Latino origin. And yet, the INS claims that they believe that there are some 90,000 illegal aliens in the state of Oregon. So why do we have this very small percentage? It's because of the barriers that we put forth to those students who graduate from our high schools and who are academically prepared to go on to college but can't afford it. This is an issue of cost and nothing else than that. But the most important reason for your consideration of this bill, I believe, is for the education of our citizenry. This is about human capital. This is about educating a workforce. The Hispanic and Latino population is the fastest growing segment in our state, and probably in the nation, but certainly in our state. And yet, this emerging workforce will be barred from higher education and barred from the academic credentials that will contribute to them, to their incomes and their contributions to the state. It's a very important matter. So I would just like to say what it will do if you pass Senate Bill 10. It will make education more affordable to all our students, and as the principal of Woodburn said, the students who've been in school together, on our playgrounds together, and have achieved equally, it will allow them all to attend university at resident tuition rates. It will boost retention at the K-12 level, something that we desperately need. Right now, the Department of Education claims that there is some 11% dropout rate among our Hispanic population. That's a very sad number and can be prevented. It will develop the state's human resources and contribute to the economic viability of the state. And it will promote lawful pursuit of legal status. And lastly, it will end a price discrimination that is so arbitrary and unfair. Now, Senator Starr and members of the committee, I could address the issue, I think, of the difference between the admission decision and the residence decision. They are two separate things. Mm-hmm. At the university level, at Portland State University at any rate, we make an admission decision based upon academic credentials. The ability to succeed in college has nothing to do with residency status or citizenship. Has nothing to do with that. We simply evaluate the student's application on the basis of his or her ability to succeed. Then, on that application, we ask, are you a citizen of the United States? Again, it has nothing to do with residency at this point. We simply need to know citizenship. It's asked. We are required to ask it. We do. If they say yes, then we go to whether they have had continuous presence in this state, whether there's evidence that they are residents of the state for tuition purposes. High school graduates in the state of Oregon typically qualify on that basis alone. They've been here for at least 1 year, and their source of financial support is typically within the state as well. Those are the things we look for, and the intention of being in the state for residency purposes. Now, for this group of students who are undocumented, they would say no, they're not a citizen. That takes us down a different path of decision. If not a U.S. citizen, then what is your visa status? In this case, no visa status. So we assign arbitrarily at that point, we will admit, but we will assign a non-resident tuition amount, some $10,000 more per year, not counting books. A textbook, a biology textbook, costs $150. Imagine when you add on all those costs and the costs of just living. It's a barrier that these students cannot afford. So the distinction then is, if there is no visa status, then they are assigned the non-resident rate for tuition purposes, and they are admitted to our institution and accepted and welcomed. Do you have any questions of me?
Maybe I missed something, but does this apply to the community colleges as well? It does apply to people.
I believe we're going to hear about that.
I'll hear the answer.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Perry.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is the certifiably smart person that we were looking for. So, I think that what I heard is that the issue is that before us is really only about who shall pay in-state tuition.
That's correct.
Period. Mm-hmm. It isn't about residency or legal status or citizenship. That's another issue altogether. And it sounds like to me that if you had a law that allowed the GED or the three-year residents to be your proof of in-state tuition or your authorization for in-state tuition, that really is all that is needed. And I would like to ask that.
Senator Starr? Yes, Senator Farrar.
It's a nub of the issue. And I guess if that's the ultimate answer on this thing, I guess the only other question I'd ask you is, it will not fall to the university president to write a rule to determine whether a student plans to become a citizen of this country or to pursue legal status. How would you write that rule, Mr. Chairman?
How would I write it?
Well, it'll fall to you, won't it? I mean, it'll be the president.
I would not ask that of these students. I would educate them on the merits of educating our workforce. But if that is part of this legislation, then I would ask the students to so state, and we would put that in the his or her confidential student file. And that would be enough.
Chairman, there you go. We're getting right to it. And the confidential student file is confidential.
Yes, sir.
So to whom would you ever show this document? And would it even be legally binding, for instance?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we would not show that to anyone but the student, should the student ask, or if we were provided with a legal subpoena. Your question as to what the legal binding status, I can't answer. I would say that if the student asserts that he or she intends to pursue citizenship, that intent is a fact at that time, and certainly I would think that there would be no legal binding to that, but you would have to ask the appropriately certified smart people about that.
Well, they're probably watching on television now, Mr. Chairman. Those answer my questions.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you.
Chairperson and committee members. My name is Leo Rosca Hidalgo, and I am a teacher, and I will bring to you just another dimension as I support Senate Bill 10. I've been a teacher of Chicano Latino students since 1968, both in California and in Oregon. In the past 4 years, I've been a part-time instructor at the local community college in which I've taught 322 Chicano Latino students. Just as my years in California, I can say that at least 50% of those individuals that I've taught over the years, as well as here in Oregon, are undocumented individuals. I think what's really needed to hear, basic to hear, is for us, is another dimension, that is to listen to the voices of the students. And so what I want to share with you is just some anecdotes that I've had of the students that I've taught here in Oregon. The names are fictitious, but if we can just hear what they have said to me and see the benefit of Senate Bill number 10. The first person is Juan, and he's been in the United States for 6 years. He works every summer to take classes during the academic year. This spring term, he will complete 90 credits at the local community college. The other day, he shared with me, "I don't know what to do. No tengo papeles. I don't have papers. And I can't afford the $3,600 a term in tuition." He wants to be a major in business. Rigoberto, he's recently arrived immigrant and was graduated from McKay High School here in Salem. For the past 3 years, he self-advised himself into the Oregon Transfer Degree Program. When I met him 2 years ago, he was engaged in the midst of his calculus sequence of courses. He desires to be a mathematics teacher. But because of his current immigration status and lack of funds, he is in a quandary of being able to continue his education at a four-year institution. There's Norma, who's been here with her family since 1989 in the Mid-Willamette Valley. For the past 3 years, she has been taking specific courses at the local community college that will go toward an education major at a four-year institution. She has maintained a 3.75 GPA. Unaware of her immigration status until 3 weeks ago, I learned that she cannot proceed toward her dream due to the tripling of tuition costs under the category of either international student or out-of-state resident. And finally, there is Edgar, who came to the United States 4 years ago as a monolingual Spanish speaker. He learned English and graduated from high school in 3 years. Last summer, he worked 3 jobs and secured some private scholarships. He is now majoring in biology with a 3.7 GPA. At the very same time, he is holding down 2 part-time jobs in order to meet the living expenses of those students who are classified as out-of-state residents. And I summarize the above voices with Sylvia's comment to me 2 weeks ago. She asked me, "Why does the current law hurt all of us?" She answered her own question. We all suffer when a significant number of good students in our communities are prevented from completing their education and reaching their full potential. We suffer because we are deprived of future contributors and leaders that will help stimulate economic growth and enrich our society. It's students like these here in the state of Oregon, even with their immigrant status, that are the future educational professionals in our increasing multicultural society. And basically, their desire is to have an education at a four-year institution in such specialties as education, health, law, and social work, only to return and serve their communities in these critical areas of need in our state. And in closing, I've had the honor to witness their intellectual acumen, their critical reflection, and their great desire to complete their studies in higher education in appreciation of their family's struggles, risks, and sacrifices to bring them to a land of opportunity for life and living. And in my years, both here in California and Oregon, I can attest to the fact that they are indeed academically qualified for the colleges and universities they yearn to attend. It is the cost that is the main barrier in going along that path. And I think it's really important for us to consider as we go down the road of the bill into law that we remember the voices and their desires when it comes to being a fully educated young man, young woman. And if the committee has any questions, by all means, feel free to ask those.
Senator Ferriola.
Senate Bill 10, the major part of the bill says that the student must have resided here a period of 3 years and have a high school diploma or equivalent. Mr. Chairman, why isn't that or? Either reside here for 3 years or have a high school diploma or equivalent. Senate Bill 10, line 9, page 1, resided in the state with a parent or legal guardian for at least 3 consecutive years while attending a secondary school and received a high school. I'm just curious why that wasn't or received. In other words, 3 years residency or a high school diploma or if it's or it's a equivalency.
Mr. Chair.
Trigger residence tuition.
Students who graduate from Oregon high schools and apply for admission to the state university system aren't automatically granted tuition at resident rates because there must be continuous presence. In other words, the simplest example would be a student who graduates from an Oregon high school and moves to Cincinnati and lives there and then comes back and attends, our university system will attend if he or she has not resided in our state for the 12 continuous months and intended to come to Oregon for something other than educational purposes as stipulated in the OARs about residency, then that student would pay non-resident tuition even though he may have graduated from an Oregon high school. So it's the presence, the intent, and the graduation from high school.
Thank you, Mr. President. That explains the difference between and or for the first time in my legislative career.
That's very good. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I am looking at about 50 witnesses. I'm looking at about 45 minutes. I'm wondering if you really want this bill passed on. You want to talk to us, each and every one? This is, you know, I think that you all have a story to tell, I'm sure. We, if you can tell us your story in 1 minute or less, that would be really helpful. And
or Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. Or maybe if a few really want to have a chance to tell their story, I think it would be great for the committee to hear maybe a representative collection. So if there are, and I think you have a committee that's wanting to pass this bill, but that might be a way of self-selection.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, my name is Chris Ketbeck, and I'm a second-year law student at the University of Oregon. I'm just here to present something really fast to you guys today. On behalf of concerned faculty and students who cannot be here today, we have filmed this documentary supporting Senate Bill 10. This documentary contains the testimony of professors, students, some of your fellow legislators, and most importantly, the students and the children of the state of Oregon, some of which are here today. Most importantly, in conclusion, we believe this bill should not be seen as mere charity, but as a way of rewarding much deserving students, and I think that's the bottom line.
Thank you very much. We got State Representative Dalto. Are you here to testify, State Representative?
Mr. Chair, I'm just observing. Thank you.
All right. Didn't want to...
Lend my moral support.
All right. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're going to... invite some witnesses forward here, and I'm... I've got Jay Breslow, Brenda, and Brenda, you're...
Cifuentes.
Yes, would you come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brenda Cifuentes, and I am the co-chair of the Oregon Students of Color Coalition. I'm also a graduate from Ontario High School in Ontario, Oregon, and a student at the University of Oregon. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 10. The Oregon Students of Color Coalition believes this bill is critical to opening up colleges for many promising students who are currently unable to continue their education after high school. As a college student, I know firsthand the challenges affording an education. In order to pay for school, I have a work-study job, student aid, and loans. Luckily, I'm eligible for in-state tuition. It would be nearly impossible for me to afford a college otherwise. Some of my fellow graduates from Ontario High School are not so fortunate, despite the fact that they attended the same elementary, high school, and middle school schools that I did. They're ineligible for state tuition because of their official residency status. Oregon needs to reconsider this policy. In 1982, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that any child, regardless of immigration status, could enroll in public and secondary schools. The court recognized that children have no control over their residency and held that all children have an equal right to education. Oregon has acted on this vision by investing in undocumented students at primary and secondary levels. But when these same graduate students graduate from high school, often with achievement and college qualifying records, many of them are unable to achieve their dreams of earning a college degree in the state they call home. Because many undocumented students come from lower income families, it would be challenging for them to even pay in-state tuition and fees. But non-resident tuition places college completely and hopelessly out of reach. By allowing certain undocumented students to pay in-state tuition rates, Senate Bill 10 provides a solution that would benefit students and the state. This bill makes sure that all students who have long continued participated in Oregon's education system have access to in-state tuition rates so they continue to be a part of our state's education community. Increasing access to college means not only encouraging all students to reach their full potential, but also educating educated workforce and increasing future contributions to the state economy. Oregon cannot afford to lose any of these bright and promising students simply because they cannot afford an out-of-state tuition rate. On behalf of the Oregon Students of Color Coalition, with partnership with the Oregon Student Association, I urge you to pass Senate Bill 10. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Please.
Chair Starr and members of the committee, my name is Jay Breslow. I'm a graduate of Hillsborough High School and the University of Oregon, and I work and live down in Eugene, Oregon now. And I work with groups of high school students, some of whom are here today, and there's a number of high school students that are here in the crowd. And I guess with the committee's indulgence, and just to show a little bit of to recognize the effort that they've put out to take some time off, I'd like to have them stand up and say their name and their school. If that's okay, you got to do it quick.
Yes, please. We'd permit that.
Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, with respect to time, we would like to see an action. And so we think that it would be best if we stand up and spoke and introduced ourselves to you, to acknowledge the time that we've taken to come here to testify to you. Hopefully we can see an action on this bill. My name is Cassandra Villanueva. I'm a student at Chemeketa Community College, where I've attended the last 3 years. I moved to Oregon in 1996. I pursue a degree in law, labor, immigration, and civil rights.
My name is Amy Nanny. I'm a senior at Olathe University, majoring in Spanish and Latin American studies, and I'm here to show my support of this bill.
My name is Nora Villanueva, and I attend Olathe University, freshman, and I support this bill.
My name is Richie Medina. I'm a sophomore here at Willamette University, and I'm supporting the bill. I wasn't prepared to give a speech, but
sure. Why not? Thank you. My name is Alejandro Vasquez. I'm a student at Western Oregon University, and I support this bill.
My name is Jose Manuel Campos. I'm a graduate from Western Oregon University, and I work directly with high school students, and I'm supporting this bill.
My name is Amy Solis. I am a sophomore at Western Oregon University, and my pursuit is to become a secondary high school education teacher, and I'm here to urge to support this bill.
Hey, I'm Marcus. I'm going to go to Chemeketa College and I support this bill.
My name is Rosario Rodriguez. I grew up in Woodburn, graduated class 99. I'm currently attending Western University. There I'm involved with like Mecha, OSA, and so forth with I'm a senior this year. So with a business degree and child studies minor, and I'm a supporter of this group.
Juliana Cimeros, I will go to Western Oregon University, and I'm here on support of this
bill. My name is Diego Perez. I'm currently a student at Western University, and my major is business.
I'm Benita Michael, I'm a junior at Western Oregon University.
My name is Maribel Ortega. I'm from Harvester Oregon. I go to Western Oregon University, and I'm here to support Senator Tim with OSAC members and also Metro. So.
My name is Ingrid Adventidato. I'm from Churchill High School.
I'm sure you got bigger voices than that. Speak up so everybody can hear.
My name is Belinda Sandoval. I'm a part of Mecha Civic Community College, and without passing this bill, I feel it would be discriminating and offensive.
I'm Wendy Espiti. I'm currently a freshman at Mecha Community College, and
my name is Teresa Moses. I am a senior at Orlando High School, and I'll be a future student at the University of Oregon.
My name is Carlos Garcia, and I'm a student at Chemeketa Community College.
My name is Teresa Rodriguez, and I was a student at Chemeketa, and I support this bill.
My name is Marisolina Adriana, and I'm a student at Chemeketa.
My name is Roberto Rojal. I'm a student at Chemeketa Community College, and also representing the Chemeketa Community College. In support of Senate Bill. I'm Larry Klein. I graduated from high school in 1971. Yeah. But I'm still here supporting this bill. I'm also a member of the Woodburn School District Budget Committee.
My name is
Guadalupe
Quinn, and I'm in Lane County. I'm here on behalf of PALS in support of the Senate Bill for our youth and for our future.
My name is Rachel Phelps, and I'm a student at Community College.
My name is Enrique Ortega, and I come from Chemeketa School.
My name is Luis Villegas. I'm a student at Chemeketa, and I'm in favor of the bill.
My name is Imelda Maya. I'm in favor of this bill. I attend Chemeketa Community College for right now. I have a certificate in education, and I also have my degree. And I'm transferring to Western next term, and I'm here in favor of Senate Bill 10.
My name is David Ramos, and I support the bill. Por favor.
It is a fun battle. Maldonado from Chemeketa Community College with voices.
My name is Cruz Salgado, and I am a student from Chemeketa.
My name is Adolfo Salgado. I'm currently a student at Chemeketa Community College. I'm studying to transfer to Columbia University in the fall, and I'm coming to support this bill.
My name is Joseph Bosquez. I'm a member of Latinos Unidos Siempre.
I'm here in favor of the bill, Senate Bill 10. Like you said, por favor.
No problema.
My name is Amelia Lozito. I'm a sophomore at Penn State University, and I'm here to support Measure 10.
My name is Brenda Ramos. I graduated from Benson High School.
My name is Sarah Lopez. I'm a senior nursing major at Portland State University, and I support this bill.
I'm Naomi Corwin. I'm a studio art major at Willamette, and I support this bill.
I'm Jessica Bonan, and I'm a senior at Woodburn High School. I'll be graduating this spring and hopefully going to Mayfield College to pursue my degree in sociology, and I fully support this bill.
My name is Vanessa Vera. I'm from Fort Hays State University, and I'm here to support the bill because I feel Oregon State needs more diversity.
Hi, my name is Olivia Quiroz. I'm a junior at Oregon State University. I'm also representing Metra from OSU, and I'm here to support the bill.
Hi, my name is Fatima Madrid. I went to LBCC. I would like you guys to pass this bill. I want to go to a four-year college. I'm not a resident, so I really want to get my degree becoming a lawyer.
My name is Kayla Almazan, and I attend to LBCC. This is my second year, and we need you guys to pass this bill so I can continue with my education.
I'm Sylvia Cho, and I'm a first year student at Wyoming University, and totally for this bill.
My name is Candace Coots. I'm a junior at the University of Oregon and alliance with the Oregon Students of Color Coalition, and I fully support this bill.
I'm Eddie Morales, a senior, triple major at the University of Oregon, and I plan on running for office one day, and I support this bill as well.
Is that everybody? Okay, I won't.
My name is Brenda Liliana Dantonia. I'm here as an American citizen, a Latina immigrant, a taxpayer, a sophomore at Chemeketa Community College, a student, a future student at Western Oregon University, and I'm here to support Bill 10.
Thank you.
I'm Lorenzo Dantonia, and I am attending Chemeketa Community College. She's in support of Senate Bill 10.
I gathered as much. Thank you. Any others? We.
My name is Xochitl Esparza, and I'm a graduate of high school in Los Angeles. I went to school with a lot of students who were unable to attend college like I was because of their immigration status. Students who were very close to the valedictorian and had their dreams shattered as they couldn't pay for their education. I am a graduate of Xochitl Esparza College.
On that note, why wouldn't you want more positivity from your people and citizens and the community?
I'm Marissa Vasquez. I'm in Coastal Contact from Brooklyn High School. I do believe that all students go to college, and I believe the doors to your university can be open. I fully support this bill.
I work down in Eugene at Centro Latino Americano in a nonprofit, and I'm gonna keep it very short. But working with Latino students in an advocacy role, one of the things that I was looking at the school report card from 2001-2002, and one of the things that it shows that there's a well documented achievement gap for Latino students on the 10th grade assessments. They have the lowest percentage of students meeting the minimum standards in both reading and math. Also, someone mentioned the dropout rates. Latino students represented 7.9% of all Oregon high school students, yet 17.1% of all students who dropped out of school. And while this is great for the students who do well in school and who are the high achievers, I'm wondering how many people don't achieve highly, don't go for that because they know, you know, that might not be a possibility for them. So for the students who are still in school, also for the students who have graduated and are moving on to our colleges and universities, I think this is an amazing opportunity for the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Now, I need to ask.
Senator Marstead has a question.
An unanswered question. Now, the bill itself addresses community colleges. The amendment gets rid of lines 4 through 24 and talks about the university system. Some of you are currently attending a community college, and that is allowed. This bill does not affect the community college, right?
That's right. Currently, they're allowed to attend school in community
college. So my question, I guess, is, and I don't know, community college, could you answer this question for me, please? I guess you'd just go ahead and identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, for the record, Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association.
You just happened to be here today, right? No, thank you, Andrea. The community colleges, tell me about your out-of-state tuition.
Community college, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, community colleges certainly currently have different tuition rates for people that are in-state or out-of-state. That, however, affects only people who are permanent residents of out of this state. By administrative rule, community colleges have a 90-day residency requirement. So essentially, anybody who comes to Oregon and has lived here for 90 days are considered a resident of the state and pay in-state tuition.
So it doesn't have a regard to citizenship then at all?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no, it does not.
And that is by administrative rule?
Yes, it is.
And so I guess Senator Farrelly raises the question of administrative rule for the colleges, and they say they can't do it by administrative rule. That's an interesting difference. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That really helps, and we appreciate the effort that all you students made to be here. It's impressive. Your performance is impressive, and thank you again for allowing us to move on. I have at least one other. Who else would like to testify? Eduardo?
Yes. Yes.
Please come forward. Identify yourself and...
Good afternoon, Senator Stark, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Eduardo Angulo. I'm the chairman and the spokesperson for the Salem-Kaiser Coalition for Equality here in Salem. We are a coalition of community organizations representing Latinos, Afro-American, Native Americans, students of color, and poor white students. I am in complete support of Senate Bill number 10, and I think that there was one question that was asked by Senator Farrelly, and I think that that is a very valid question. And the question is, why do we ask the question at the college regarding status, legal status, if we don't ask the question at the K-12? We know the answer for that. You have a constitutional guarantee. Every child has a constitutional guarantee. Now, the other part of the answer has to be, what is it in this bill for Oregonians? I guess that now that we are in our desperate situation and our budget problems, it always comes to mind that if we allow these students, all these youth, all these children to be here from K-12 by constitutional law, and then when they finish the K-12, then we drop these students, many of them becoming a burden to our communities. Many of them, like many testify today, not having the chance to go on and fulfill their dreams. And it is just good economics to help these students become the doctors, become the lawyers, become the professionals. When we talk about our problems with our Social Security status, when we talk about the economic problems of the state, we need these new, vibrant people that are becoming professionals to help us. They are the potential of our economy. They are the potential of our future. It is all about having the vision to see that we'd rather have these people paying taxes as professionals than taking from the system because they cannot amount to much without a college education in our world economy right now. So I truly believe that the passage of this bill is good for the economic of our state. Not just good common sense and the right thing to do, but it is good for our economy. Thank you, Senators.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to speak very loudly because I'd like for these young people to hear my story.
We need your name.
I'm Rosemary Cooper-Ryder. I was delighted to be asked to talk to this committee about my desire for opportunity for farm workers to receive an education to increase their opportunities for a better life. I grew up in a family that valued a good education for their children. Mother and father, both well educated. Father was a pastor and seminary trained. My mother was a Stanford graduate and school teacher. During the Great Depression of the 30s, in January 1937, before I was to graduate from high school, my father, in desperation, left home in Wenatchee, Washington, to the fields of California to become a farm worker, and I became a farm worker daughter. My family moved to Berkeley, California, and I was able to get through college at UC Berkeley. It took 7 years, living at home and working part-time. After our 4 children were old enough, I pursued the career of community organizer, organizing assistance to better the lives of farm workers. My passion, besides my family, became the cause to help farm workers. On my 80th birthday, 4 years ago, last Sunday, my family honored these 35-plus years of endeavor with a scholarship fund. The fund is to be given to young farm worker women intent on getting an education with the goal of bettering the lives of farm workers. The first recipient was a young woman student at Oregon State University whose goal is to be a civil rights lawyer. The next recipient is now a second-year student at Chemeketa Community College who plans to become a teacher. Because of the transience of farm workers, I feel this bill to eliminate out-of-state fees for tuition will assist them in getting an education. Here's a picture of my honor, if any of you would like to see it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that testimony. Yes, sir.
I'm Vern Cooper-Ryder. I'm a board member of the Oregon Farm Worker Ministry. I just wanted to make one point, and that is that I'm old enough to remember the GI Bill back after World War II, which made a terrific difference in the economy of our country and in the lives of all the people that were able to get an education at that point. And it seems to me that there is some corollary here, that we're offering a real opportunity for those who otherwise would not be able to afford a college education. So therefore, I am very much in favor, as a senior citizen, for helping our young people who are the future of our country to get this kind of a support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate all the good testimony. We don't allow outbursts like that ordinarily. We're rolling on here. Please, with your testimony, brief.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ferrioli.
Is the chair's intention to enter a work session on the bill?
Yes, it is.
Does the chairman have a preference for the structure of the amendment or the bill as an unamended version?
I have preference for the dash two amendments, which were brought forward by the chief sponsor of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, we'd like to ask you to pass this bill out of this committee today. And in addition to that, we'd like to offer our testimony in hopes that we could pass this bill once again out of this committee this afternoon.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Let me begin first by saying that Senate Bill 10 is long overdue for Oregon and deserving students. Without the passage of Senate Bill 10, the future of Oregon is bleak because it will be lacking the leadership that students today strive to offer. As legislators, you have the power to shape the future of Oregon. Now is the time to stop the oppression of Latino immigrants and students who are law-abiding and taxpaying persons. Now is the time to stop the inequality and take a stand for what is just, an equal opportunity for education. Each year, hundreds of thousands of students who were brought here as children grow up and graduate from high school with aspirations of becoming the doctors, the lawyers, the scientists and the nurses, and leaders of our community. I am one of them. We have graduated as leaders and valedictorians, athletes of our high schools with dreams to make the world and our communities a better place. However, these dreams never come true because the access to education is blocked by several barriers. As students, we've been taught that success and power is in knowledge and in education, yet we are still restricted in attaining any education above high school. Why is this? Is it to ensure the manual labor workforce in the fields that they don't have any shortages? As mentioned before, we pay taxes, we are law-abiding, and it's only fair to have an equal level playing field in attaining an education. If this bill does not pass, I believe it will further perpetuate the oppression of all people by restricting access to higher education. Once again, I'm here today to ask you to pass this bill out of committee and open the door for education to everyone, not just a privileged few. Open the door to students who have earned the privilege and who have demonstrated and proven themselves that they deserve the same equal opportunity as other students. They have grown up here just as other students and graduated. Once again, I ask you to support this and pass it out of committee today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Please. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Abel Carvajal, and I am the chair of Latinos Unidos Siempre, LUS. I am here today to advocate for Senate Bill 10 and to say that this bill has been long awaited. Senate Bill 10 is important because it will give the opportunity to all young people to obtain an equal education and not to be discriminated because of their legal status. Every year, there are thousands of immigrant students graduating high school with honors and as valedictorians that have dreams and aspirations of becoming contributors to their communities. They find their dream to be shattered when it comes time to apply for college and find that not only are they not eligible for financial aid, but on top of that, they need to pay out-of-state tuition. This makes it impossible for our future attorneys, doctors, architects, engineers, and future legislators to achieve their dreams and to become productive citizens of our community. It is not fair that our children pay the price for a decision made by their parents where the children had no input. These children and youth eat America, sleep America, and dream America. Therefore, they are Americans and deserve the same rights as everyone else. This is the country that gave them self-identity, beliefs, dreams, and aspirations. Today, I'm here to urge you to vote in favor of Senate Bill 10. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Starr, members of the committee. I'll try and be brief. My name is Peter Hanley. I'm Executive Director of CASA of Oregon. We provide housing services to farm workers around the state. We also provide a scholarship fund for sons and daughters of farm workers, and so I would encourage everyone that is interested in that to look at the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce website. CASA of Oregon understands the obstacles that immigrants face. I'd like to commend Senator Farioli for the work that he did on the Farm Worker Task Force 4 years ago, which came up with many solutions for housing for the agricultural workers in the state of Oregon. Senator Farioli was key to some of the legislation that ended up passing in the 2001 session, and I'd like to commend him for his work on that. The obstacles that immigrants face are immense. Discrimination, they're marginalized in society, and while the federal government can provide what many of these folks crave, the state of Oregon has the opportunity with this bill to recognize them as Oregonians. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We are about ready to close the public hearing and go to a work session. Would you please make this?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, I think we can speak for most of us. That's why we're here. We want to get this past the committee. If you guys take this to work session, we're ready to go home, too.
Hey, like that. With that, we're going to close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 10.
Chairman?
We need the dash two amendments because of the first sentence in the original bill, which says without regard.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Siamo senatore Teodoro Ferrioli, anche io vuole questa legislazione. So I'll translate that. My name is Ted Ferrioli, and I want this legislation. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd move the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 10.
Senator Ferrioli has moved the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 10. Any discussion? Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just will tell you that it is very invigorating to see so many students pursuing their dreams in the hearing today. And though we didn't get a chance to hear in depth from many of you, I think I speak for a number of us that it's just really invigorating for us to get to hear and see so many students moving on with their lives. And so this is one yes vote that will feel very good to cast. So I thank you for that.
Is there any objection to the dash two amendments? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, it's my pleasure to move the bill to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Senator Ferrioli has moved Senate Bill 10 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Having received the necessary majority, Senate Bill 10 is moved to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ferrioli, will you carry?
I would defer the honor of carrying this bill
Senator Courtney,
to
probably.
The primary sponsor, who is Senator Courtney, and I would think he would want to carry the bill.
I believe that as well, and so we will likely find him carrying the bill when we get to the Senate floor.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just assign it to him.
I will assign the bill to Senator Courtney. By the way, I too want to express gratitude for you showing up here in support of this. Not a well-known fact, I left my place of birth after changing schools 19 times in grammar school and 9 times in high school as a migrant farm worker in 1949, came to the Pacific Northwest where God has been good, and I have enjoyed my life here in the Pacific Northwest. And thank you. And we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 455.
I need the
We need the mind.
Mr. Chairman, I've got an appointment at 5:00 to leave. Are you going to move these other bills today?
Yes, only one bill and don't leave.
That's right.
Please. Get it. Nice job. Can we go into recess until those amendments show up, Mr. Chairman?
What, there.
Andrea here.
What is it?
Andrea. Where's Andrea?
Oh. No problem. It's a funding committee. How much does it cost? What's the fiscal?
It's gone to ways.
It goes to ways and means.
Yeah, it goes to ways and means. That's not true. We're still on the record.
We have witnesses for Senate Bill 455.
I've actually been reviewed with
Tim Price Brawley.
That's me.
Please.
Am I joining?
Join Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bill Morissette, Senator from District 6, Lane County, Linn County. And I think it's an appropriate bill to have after what we heard about higher ed. We heard very little about the community college, very little about the value of the community college program, even though they were allowed to attend community college, they didn't acknowledge the fact that they, what they might have received from the community college, the two-year programs and all, and I just think that emphasizes the point of this bill. We do have a quality education model for K-12. We also have a model that we're working on for the university system, higher ed. And what that involves, it involves advocacy groups outside of the system that come together and look at the needs of the system and become advocates and make recommendations for funding. Now, what this bill does is establish an advocacy group for the community college system. It doesn't get into programs. It is not a quality education model as it is for K-12, but I think it's an extremely important component of our K-16 program. And on Thursday, we will hear, the room will be full of people again testifying about the higher ed bill. And it's full when we testify K-12. It's full when we testify for higher ed. But I think the community college, to me, is extremely important because it recognizes the needs of the community, which the university system does not. They're much broader. So the programs that will be advocated for will be unique to the needs of each community college, but the model will address the needs as a whole. So I just think this is an extremely important and almost a forgotten component of our K-16 education. So with that, I will quit.
And amendment, dash one amendments.
Pardon me?
The dash one amendments?
Yes.
Do you want to speak to those, or you want to let your...
No, I want to let my colleagues here speak to the dash one, because we just got these.
Thank you.
And I was hoping they would show up.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association, which represents the 17 community colleges in Oregon. And I'd like to testify in support of Senate Bill 455 today and the Dash 1 amendments. Senate Bill 455, as Senator Morissette explained, creates a commission that will make recommendations for an adequate level of funding for community colleges. We believe that the creation of this commission would be very beneficial to the community colleges in Oregon because we haven't received the recognition in the past. And to have that opportunity to really establish what the needs are in Oregon to adequately support the community colleges and the work that we do, both in helping the economy and serving each community around the state. As you know, community colleges have suffered from a lack of funding over the last several years. Ever since the passage of Measure 5, we've been struggling to get funding from the legislature. We were finally successful in 2001 session, and now it's all gone because of budget cuts. To put that in perspective a little bit, the budget that we have from the governor is actually lower than the 99-01 budget that we received, and is just slightly above the 97-99 level of budgeting for community colleges. Meanwhile, we've had tremendous increase in enrollment. In order to bridge this gap for community colleges, we've increased tuition 38% in the last 2 years as a statewide average and have closed over 40 professional technical programs around the state. So we would support this as a step in the right direction to help community colleges. And we do have the Dash 1 amendments that add a couple of people to the commission, including someone from a key business industry cluster and someone from a statewide business alliance, and also add a community college president to the commission as well. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
No questions.
Okay. For the record, Cam Preuss-Brawley, I'm the Commissioner for Community Colleges. I have spoken to the State Board of Education, which has the authority to administer and oversee the 17 community colleges in the state, and they are also in support of this bill. I think it is a very good idea to step back and take a look at what does it take to adequately fund community colleges. And even though we did in the 2001 session, as Andrea eloquently stated, brought to the legislature a student-based funding model, it was not adequately funded, and as she also indicated, underfunded. It is woefully underfunded now. So we do think it would be a step in the right direction to know with not just an insider sort of process, but with external assistance, exactly what it does cost to educate over 400,000 community college students a year.
Thank you very much. We're going to, without objection, close the hearing and open the work session on Senate Bill 455. We need to move the Dash 1 amendments.
So moved.
Secretary always moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 455. Any objection? Hearing none. So ordered.
Ways and Means. Mr. Chairman, I move the bill as amended to Ways and Means.
Senator Ferrioli has moved Senate Bill 455 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee.
What's your best recommendation?
I didn't make a recommendation, Madam Chairman, or Mr. Chairman. As you wish, Mr. Chairman.
With a due pass recommendation.
I amend my motion as amended with a due pass.
Thank you. And clerk, call the roll.
Senator
Ferrioli? Aye.
Senator
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Having received the necessary votes, Senate Bill 455 has moved to Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you very much. And with that, we will adjourn the Senate Education Committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.